Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The national anthem is played publicly twice a day at 8 and 18 hours. The Thai national anthem is broadcast across all television and radio. The King's anthem is played before films. So if you go to a movie, you will be listening to the King's anthem. Our king from Thailand, Brian Murata, who gave us the story of Loot, is back to share a little bit about what he's been up to. And we couldn't be more excited. So with that being said, we are back.
We have the king. We have the king of Thailand. Most people don't know that there's two kings in Thailand, the actual king, and then there's a shadow king, a king that sort of works underneath, under the system, and that's Brian. So, dog, it's good to have you back. It's been
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and speaking of the monkey, Loot, I remember it, that whole story. Unfortunate follow-up is we went back to the island to do some filming, and we wanted to like get in a full-on video story of his life, and unfortunately he passed away. So yeah, it's sad. It was devastating to the whole island right there. Loot, the goat king, has passed away, and people suspect he wasn't getting the right type of diet because he was eating what the goats were eating, you know.
What are they what's the general lifespan of one of those monkeys?
That's a good question. When we're thinking about monkeys, there's another hot topic that we're trying to get into is right now in Lopburi. Lopburi is not too far from Bangkok, and it's the monkey capital of Thailand. That entire city is locked up with cages and you know, bars over everything. Your houses, convenience stores, everything is locked up because the monkeys run wild. If you even type in Lopburi, it's L-O-P-B-U-R-I, you just see monkeys running wild. They don't know how to yet figure out the situation because they're just, you know, there's big gangs of monkeys that will just take over, run on cars, and destroy the town. So I'm thinking, okay, how can we go and do a video there without getting, like, eaten alive, literally, by monkeys? Because I don't want to have to get some shots.
This is crazy. They're everywhere. They run the town. This is nuts. What are they just like? That's just where they settled, and now there's a bunch of
that's just sprays. That just seems to be a hot spot, and then there's like a sanctuary for them, and then they gathered and then just went crazy. So everyone's known that's to be the place, you know, if you want to go see monkeys, but now it's out of hand. People can't live a normal life.
I know you're biased, but is there a place in the world as populated and as insane as Thailand? With just like all of the things going on?
You know, Thailand has a really unique, I think, mix of everything. Geographically speaking, you know, everyone knows you got the islands and then you get the mountains. And then where it is politically, it's in a unique part of Southeast Asia. So you can jump around. A lot of people that are backpacking start right in Bangkok, and then you can do all of Southeast Asia in one like loop, and then and then come back to Bangkok and out again. So you can see Angkor Wat in Cambodia, you go to Vietnam, cross over to Laos, go see the Ho Chi Minh Trail, the Plain of Jars, and then up in northern Thailand and back. So Thailand's, you know, really unique in that aspect. And then when you look at politically, yes, there's a democratic monarchy and the king. And as you were talking about in the beginning, yes, there is the music, the national anthem they play. And if you're outside or at a park, right at 6 o'clock is when that song comes on. And most people, even if you're at the track or whatnot, they stop. So everyone's running, playing soccer, and all of a sudden everyone freezes. Like in the beginning, when you're first here, you're like, what's going on? No matter where you are in the city, everyone just stops and they just stand there for like a solid, you know, 2 minutes until the song is done. And then they keep running and then they go back to whatever it is they're doing.
That's so funny. So, I like that.
That was definitely weird at first.
Yeah, you get used to it. All right, so I've seen you physically. Obviously, we got a chance to hang out over the winter, but since the last time you've been on the pod, but since then, Day in the Life is starting to pick up a lot of traction. You've got, you know, obviously you had the story, unfortunately, RIP Loop, but you also did some stuff with Senchai, Muay Thai boxer, lobster farms, pythons, yes, fishermen, snake wranglers, and you got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. So what are your, like, recently, what have been your most, like, I guess I'll say influential in terms of where you're taking the show from here? So what have you done out of those last few, I'll call it episodes, that you're thinking, hey, this is really cool. This was like, even for you, this was like crazy. I know you and I talked about the python, and that was like the first time you felt like you were actually pretty close to dying, which.
Yeah, you, that one hurt.
That's for you, because you've almost died like 500 times at this point.
Yeah, and that one I signed up for when he said, you want to try? And I was like, he said, I can try. Okay.
Yeah, sure. It should be fine. So tell us a little bit about like what you've been doing episode wise, like where you guys are headed, and like what have been the most intense sessions that you've had so far.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think the start too is, I think last time we were chatting, I didn't have a channel. I was
not really
planning on it, thinking about it. And so, shout out to Randy Travis. Okay. That's, even though there's the singer, Randy Travis, my buddy, Randy Travis, we go way back. And he's the expert. He's the magician behind the camera. So he's been doing that professionally. He used to be an underwater professional photographer. Yep. He does drones, and then he films for high-end hotels or other businesses. And he was just getting kind of bored of the repetitive style. You know, he has a lot in that world, a lot of experience, and he was just filming the same thing over and over. And, you know, we've been friends for years. He said, okay, Brian, you love to talk. You're great at talking to people. You can get them to open up. We can go inside their house. Everything is like people just warm up, you know.
Especially it's a gift. That's a gift that you can do that, by the way. It's why you're able to do this.
I mean, I just thought, okay, that's what I do. I mean, I'm interested to learn about the world around me. I've been living here in Thailand now almost 20 years. The way that I investigate is by talking. And so the more
you're fearless and you're curious. So those two things combined.
That's the way to go, you know? Yeah. And then you can get into the culture, the people, and so forth. So he's like, let's work together. So it was really a teamwork, because I couldn't do the editing. I can't film. I don't have that mindset. I'm not the type of guy that can, you know, no offense, everyone's got their own style to it, but I can't get a selfie stick in front of me and walk around.
Well, I remember many years ago, the Bacardi videos.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we did some stuff, all right? So don't sell yourself short. We made some videos. We did some stuff. Ben can vouch.
Yeah, that was the early days with computers and videos. So really, we've been able to take both of our skill sets and combine them. And we thought about how can we start this off, because we understand that it's going to take a while until you can monetize your channel, right? Mm-hmm. You got to put in the hours, put in the time. So we were fortunate enough where Randy had a gig that was for a professional fight between Bok Hao and Sanchai. And maybe if not both of these names, people are going to know at least one of these like OG Thai fighters. When it comes to Muay Thai in Thailand, you're going to know these names. Bok Hao and Sanchai are just like on another level. And there's nobody in Thailand that doesn't know who these people are, especially when you talk about Bok Hao. He's an actor. He's on commercials. His face is everywhere. There's streets named after him. You have his village. And they're both ruthless. I mean, they're killing machines. And so Randy had a gig where he was filming a advertising video for their big fight, because they're going head to head. And keep in mind, these are two like best friends for like almost 20 years. So they've known each other forever and never thought in the world they'd be asked to fight each other. Randy got the gig to film the advertisement for them coming together. Mm-hmm. And he made a deal. He said, hey, I'll film if you can let us do a day in the life with each of them so we can, you know, start up our channel. So it was like the sweet spot. It just worked out perfectly for us. We got in there, and sure enough, both of those guys are Isan. And of course, Isan is that northeastern part of Thailand that I have a close connection with. It's where I started my first trip here in Thailand as a volunteer. So the language, the culture, the food, which you can actually see in that video, we talk a lot about, because it's very much what these people refer to, you know, as being Isan. There's the local language, the dialect, the style. And to be able to jump in with them and use Isan really allowed things just to click really fast. So
that was what I noticed when I watched that video. I remember the point where, because this happens to you a lot, right? Like they see the Falang and they're like, this kid can't possibly know all of the things that Thailand's got going on. He can't speak the language. You've been there so long now. I know you and I have talked about, you can't really be fluent in a language unless it was your home language. But I think you're the closest thing to it for at least Thai, probably close on Vietnamese. And I think you've told me like your Lao or your Vietnamese are getting a little bit falling behind Thai. But he was blown away. I remember the video when you started talking to him in that dialect, that specific dialect.
Yeah.
He was like, whoa. He was like, I never get tired of seeing people be fascinated by the fact that you are Thai.
Yeah, because we were going between English and Thai. And then I jumped in right there and just said a quick line in Isan saying, hey, we can just go ahead and use Isan. And that's when he had that reaction right there, which, yeah. You know, a lot of people love. And it's fun, too. It's fun for them. It's fun for me. You know,
it builds credibility. You opened him up right away. He was like, wow, this kid's legit. Like, that was what helped.
And they are great people. Both of them were a lot of fun to hang out with for the entire day. And it was a lot about food and then a little bit about football. And we went to the temple to make merit. So we got to see different sides of these Muay Thai fighters than you see that you normally see online. Because everything that has their name attached to it is in the gym, in the ring, just fighting and crushing. And now we're hanging out, we're having some tam, we're going to the temples, we're seeing a whole different side to their lifestyle and what they do, you know, outside of the ring so they can prepare for the ring. If that's family time, if that's prayers and amulets, which we see with Bua Khao. And I think that's what a lot of people appreciated was like, oh, this was different. And I felt too, it gave me a little bit of like, you know, encouragement, like, hey, we got something different here. Let's see what else we can do. And then we started thinking, okay, there's so much here in Thailand that really hasn't been talked about from a different angle, you know? So let's find that beautiful angle and dig deep.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, people want to see behind the scenes, right? Like of actors or movies or whatever the case is and everyday life too. People want to know, like, what are they doing outside of the public persona that, you know, is being presented.
So exactly. Really cool. And then we thought too, people come to Thailand, they talk about Thai food and the Thai nature. And when we were in Got Yao Yai, the one with Lut, the monkey goat, when we were there filming for a hotel last year, we met a lot of people. And that ended up being our next video was with Bang Mut. So this is an island that's 95% Muslim. And the people are just so charming, so chill. It's like the best food I've ever had because every ingredient is like either from the ocean or the land. And it's just like mind blowing. It's just right there. They pick it. They fished it and we're eating it fresh. So we thought, okay, a day in the life of a fisherman living off the land or from the ocean, the world around them. And these people are just living as clean as can be. And they're so happy living that way. They enjoy it. All the motorcycles still have the keys in the motorcycle because there's no robbery. There's no theft. There's no, you know.
What's the population there? How many people are living there?
That's a good question. I couldn't just say off the top of my head, but
it's
weird because it's an island. You have Got Yao Noi and Got Yao Yai. And these are two islands just off of Phuket. So what you're seeing is Phuket being a very, you know, internationally famous destination for Thailand. International airport and so forth. People are starting to venture out a little bit further to see, okay, what is outside of, you know, everything in Phuket, which we've seen now for years, and the prices have gone up. And not to say there aren't beautiful beaches and places and food to find in Phuket, certainly. But if you want to try something different, I highly off the beaten path, you know. And it's literally a boat trip over to these islands, and we hung out with them, and he's raising the buffalo. You know, there was a scene where he goes and he massages the buffalo's balls, and we're wondering, you know, like what's that all about? He says, it you know, gives him a little bit of energy. Like he likes that. He's so connected with the animals. He has birds that he trains, so they tweet, and then he has his buffaloes that he, you know, he's able to work with and produce.
How many buffaloes does offspring. He have?
At the time filming, he just had I think two. Males that he was focusing on, but they had good genetics and he bred them to a point where, okay, he could make babies and sell those babies. He had a pet monkey too. And that was lovely. You know, lovely. You could see him giving kisses to the monkey. He's really close with all the animals around them. Then you have these toucans flying around too. Not toucans, but what was it? Oh, what's the name of those birds right there? I'll find that one out in English, but there's the I can't think of it right now. But you had these amazing creatures on this small island not too far from Phuket.
Now, speaking of creatures, you had a run-in with some snakes. Now, I don't think I'm alone in that. Everybody is terrified of snakes just in general in the world because, you know, they don't have legs, they don't have arms, they're slithery, they are usually very venomous. I remember talking to you about this specifically, and it was pretty insane. Tell me a little bit about when you were hanging out with a snake wrangler and you were on the
Yeah, so I've had, you know, when you're in Thailand or Southeast Asia, you're going to run into snakes one way or the other. So I've had my fair share of encounters with pythons and cobras, king cobras and so forth. So we thought, okay, why don't we connect with like the snake wrangler of Thailand? And we did an episode with him, and through a friend of a friend, got his contact, called him up. We'd like to do this episode. He's like, all right, you know what? This sounds legit. You know, are you sure you're Falang? Yes, I'm Falang. I'm a foreigner. So he's like, show up at my place at 7:30. So we get there a little bit early, right when we show up at the fire station. So he's a volunteer. The way it works here in Thailand is you're a volunteer firefighter, okay? And he's the guy that gets called to go take snakes out of people's houses. So we show up at 7:15. He walks out. We're not even able to like fully introduce ourselves. He's like, we got a call. We're hopping in the fire truck. We got to go pick up a snake. So that's how it works here in Thailand. Like, there's no forms or anything like that. You know,
what's a fire truck? Like, a fire truck in Thailand? Is it just like a pickup truck with like a small bucket of water?
There wasn't. Yeah. A pickup truck type, you know, painted red. Yeah. And then they had like legit ones. In the episode, you can see the entire, if anyone's interested to see, like, what does a firehouse look like here in Thailand? You can see what that looks like here. We were able to go into the entire section of the firehouse where they sleep and where they eat and stuff like that. So we get off and we go and we pick up a python that killed someone's cat. And then it was stuck behind the wall, pulled it up. The thing almost jumped at the cameraman. He's backing up and there's no way for him to go anywhere. And these thing have these teeth that go in. So if it locks onto you, it's going to go in deep and you can't pull. You need to be able to push it off because they have like several layers of teeth. And they're going to go in deep. So cameraman was literally shaking and he backed up and he almost got it. And there's a nice scene where you see that thing lunging towards the snake wrangler right after it was going to go after the cameraman. And then we picked up a few cobras. And he said there's literally the numbers he was dropping is 30,000 a year. So Bangkok is a hub for these snakes. Why? Because they come in for the pigeons, the rats, all the small little prey that they can find anywhere throughout the city. Now, in Bangkok, there's what's called klong. Klong is canals that run crisscross throughout the entire city. It's basically like the map works or the train system for the snakes. Because when they come from the outer regions, they hop into that water and they can get anywhere in the entire city. Okay. Yeah. And they are huge. They are big. When he had me wrap up, he says, okay, the way they, you know, the reticulated python, they wrap you up and they can crush you in a matter of seconds, depending on your size, right? And then we learn later that they can feel your heartbeat. So they know exactly how much to squeeze. And then they get to a certain point where they know you're about to go. And then they do like a one last minute, like pull and just kind of, you know, crush you to death. Nuts. Then they'll go and devour you. So I saw this being done because he was showing me keep your hand up, you know, don't let them go around the neck because then you're goner in no time. As I was getting wrapped up there, I totally forgot that. You know, you're not consciously thinking, how do I protect myself from being killed by a python? And next thing you know, it's got my arm there. So in the video, I'm like, oh man, I'm done already. And it's squeezing and it's squeezing. And it's hard to describe what it feels like. But when that thing is crushing you, there's no leeway in there. There's nothing. It's going and it's going tighter and tighter. Those muscles, there's like 700 muscles or more than that. There's maybe a couple thousand. And they squeeze you one inch at a time. And then it got to a point where I couldn't breathe. That's right when Randy, the cameraman, is like, hey, I want to get a picture. I'm like, you get that fast, dude. I'm dying here. I feel like I'm going in that panic mode. Like I'm about to die. I can't breathe anymore. Yeah, I got these guys around me. But if they weren't around me, I'm a goner. And
how did he get it off of you? How did he physically get it off of you?
So he said, if this was the arrangement that you found yourself in, this predicament right here, I'm pretty much gone because there's nothing I can do at this point now. Now, he says that the key is to have someone else grab the tail and unwrap it around.
Okay. Because the tail's probably less strong, right? Because it's smaller. Right. So you can kind of start
there. But only
someone
else can do that because I'm wrapped up and I got my hand on its head. And he says, do not let go of that head, because if you let go of the head, it's going to go right to your neck. So now all these fangs are going to go into my neck. I'll be bleeding to death as I get crushed to death. You know, the thing wasn't large enough to consume me, but it was definitely large enough to kill me. I mean, without a doubt, it was strong enough to kill me. It was in the process of killing me until I tapped out, and I couldn't even say enough is enough. He unwrapped it. And for 2 days later, I couldn't really breathe well because my entire abdomen and lung was, like, sore. When I breathed in heavy, it was sore all around my stomach because it pulled me in so tight.
Is that the most scared you've been in Thailand, or what would trump that in terms of your time there?
No, I think when I almost ran into a wild male buffalo, like a red buffalo down south, that was more terrifying. That's when my
elephants that were creeping around your tent when you were staying out in the jungle.
Those are just as deadly. A guy got killed picking mushrooms outside of the camp I was staying with maybe a week later after I left. But again, you just need to stay inside at night. You don't go out after, 7 p.m. in those wild areas with wild elephants.
Well, that's another part of this, though. Like, so because you're fearless and because you will talk to anybody, but the one thing I know about you as well is you're like a voracious learner. So you learn the culture, you learn the structure, like you learn what you do need to do. Like, you pay attention when people are like, hey, it's important that you don't go out at this time. Like, you learn those things and you actually adhere to them. You're not just wildly randomly like roaming around hoping not to die. Like, there's some structure to it.
Oh, there's definitely structure. Like, once when you have these experiences here too, and you learn more about snakes, and when you actually learn, and now I'm talking about snakes all over Bangkok, people that aren't into snakes, like, oh, I'm not going to Bangkok. Chances of you seeing one, cruises through the city are still very rare, but they're all around. You know what I mean? You just don't see them unless you're going to look for them. And even then, the amount of people that actually die per year from snake venomous snake bites are very low because it's often a dry bite, so they don't actually release their venom. And then if you're close to a hospital, you can get that taken care of to some degree. Yeah. I mean, the snake wrangler we're with, when he was doing an exercise educating people on snake awareness, and that they're really not as dangerous as we think they are, unless you get wrapped up in one purposely, then you just got to be careful, because he lost his thumb. Half of his thumb was completely just like melted away. And the pictures were so graphic, we couldn't put them in the video because it looked like a rotten, like, banana turning black. And
I saw it. Yeah,
it was insane.
Well, he's one thumb away from becoming a monkey then. So he's pretty close at this point to going full circle. What about, talk to me about Sasquatch. Talk to me a little bit about Sasquatch. Gibby, you got something?
That's something I'm thinking about putting in. I know people say, no way. Is he going down that road, Sasquatch? I am a big Sasquatch, Bigfoot believer.
They're just big monkeys.
For anyone that spends the time doing some research, you'll realize that there are a species that live here in Southeast Asia. Now, I have a contact of someone, and I don't even want to let you know which country and which province is in. And I'll be honest, this is like, in my mind, I want to make sure it's done right. I want to make sure it's done right so that the people that live in this area, if it works out that you can find that there is a very rare species of bipedal, ape-like animal, human, however you want to call it, living in these jungles, then let's make a special sanctuary for that to be protected. And then the people that live in that area can take people out to view, to track, and so forth. And that's going to take a lot of work. So I do believe that I have the sweet spot. I went there about a month ago, and I did some interviews with people that know about this Sasquatch living in the jungle. And I heard stories that were just like, whoa, I wish I knew this years ago. I did not know that this exists here in Southeast Asia. So is that going to be an episode? Possibly, but we're going to make sure we do it right. Because if I drop some names of villages or villagers in places, I don't want all these, Bigfoot hunters just running over there in the jungle and messing things up.
I'm curious, how long, are you taking for preparation, or are you actually like talking to the villagers? Are you spending a week there, 2 weeks there, and then going back and doing, you know, shoot potentially, or how does that look from the whole production standpoint?
Yeah, so it depends on like what it is we're doing. Like I just got back an hour ago. We spent 3 hours at a temple. We found a local temple, and we talked to the head monk and asked if it was, if we could have permission to live a day in the life with a monk from the you know, early morning until the middle of the day when they pretty much end their activities. And so what we do is we go, in this case here in Bangkok, a day ahead of time to just warm things up, you know, let them know who we are. Like sometimes they're wondering, who are these Falang? Who are these foreigners showing up with a camera, and how do we want to do things? And we let them know our style, what we're looking to do. And usually it's like green thumb, you know, like green light, green, let's go.
Yeah.
And green thumb, green thumb. Ready to roll. and then we're going to go the next day. In some cases, it might be something where we'll have to do some recon work a few months beforehand. I got back from Laos maybe a month ago, and I met up with some villagers in areas of southern Laos where there's still a huge problem with unexploded bombs from the Vietnam War. So after the Vietnam War, you have to keep in mind that 75% of the Ho Chi Minh Trail ran through Laos, okay? Yep. They call it Laos, so I'll usually refer to it as Laos. But you have this country that has literally thousands of unexploded bombs left over in Laos, and it's affecting people's daily life. These are people.
They're underground, right? They're buried.
They're underground, and some of them are small bombies, right? That look like fruit, are designed to look that way, like yellow in color, painted yellow. So people think it's a fruit. They go and touch it. It clicks, shreds them to pieces. So I've been to villages years ago, and every adult in that village was missing a body part. And I mean every adult. They were missing either an eye, several fingers, legs, hands. And there's a team out there, several teams, I should point out, from, I think, England, America, and Australia, that are removing bombs on a daily basis in various parts of Laos, both north and south. And so we're hoping that we can get into Laos and try to do some of this. A day in the life of like a bomb remover, removal squad, however you want to refer to it. Because I think that would really showcase like how these people are living that are affected by these bombs, and then the type of people that are going to remove these bombs, which is pretty intense.
Yeah, that's nuts. And it's like, it's scary, right? Because the process to do that is not foolproof. Like, how many people that are going to remove these bombs end up getting got by one of these things too, right?
Keep in mind, when we were talking to some of the hunters, they said when they go out into the jungle and they build a fire, they have to dig a very deep hole underneath where they're going to build a fire to make sure there's no bombs. Because if they just built the fire there, it could set off that bomb and that place is gone to smithereens. And in my early travels, like almost 20 years ago, we were in the southern part of Laos. And we met with a bomb removal team that had metal detectors. And they had this huge bomb that they had just found. They're digging it up. And it literally said, it was like a cartoon. It said USA on it. I was with a Canadian friend. And he said, that's yours. That's not mine. And then they were hooking up, you know, electrodes to it. We had to go hide in a cave. They detonated the bomb. It blew up a huge hole in the ground in the middle of a main road. And they said, you better stay on this trail, because if you venture off this road and you go as much as like 2-3 meters off this road, you have a good chance of being blown away to smithereens. So
we stayed
on that trail.
Smart. What's next? What's in the immediate future? Like, I know some of it is stuff that you can't disclose just around like the Sasquatch, but what are you thinking? What's the next frontier?
Well, what you're going to be seeing coming soon is a few things. And this is something we just finished filming. Is the weed industry. People probably have heard that Thailand is like the mecca for marijuana, ganja, weed, okay? They like to call it marijuana, okay? Yeah. Or marijuana. Gancha, marijuana. So that was made legal about 2 years ago now. And, you know, you would have served a 10, 15-year prison sentence for such a small amount, like a doobie on you, right? And now, the next day, it was totally legal. So people are growing it, and it's everywhere. Any soy, which is a main little road off of a main street here, you can find like 2 or 3 weed shops, okay? And we're trying to figure out, okay, what's going on here? What is the weed industry? How is it growing? How are people learning this process? And we've learned a lot about like the master growers and these people, their dedication, their love for this plant and learning techniques. Like literally one of the guys learned about 10 years ago by watching YouTube videos. He doesn't speak any English, right? But he was able to watch YouTube videos. he'd click and pause and zoom in to what it was they were using, whether it was a type of like soil or mixture or compost. And he slowly kind of figured out the best way to grow indoor plants. And then when it went legal, that's some of these people's lives now, is growing like the top notch best stuff. A lot of the seeds are coming from the States.
Yeah.
Because they do best in indoor growing. The land strain stuff growing up in North, Isan, even Cambodia, they're best for outdoor. So they don't really work with the indoor growing kit that has like the stronger yields and the high THC. Again, this is all new to me, but it's been really interesting.
And you've got like, you have the climate over there to be able to grow it outside, you know, without worrying about, you know, anything that might take it down naturally. But like climate wise, Thailand is ripe for this. Like it should be a hotbed for growing marijuana.
Yeah, but it seems like with people trying to get into the indoor growing scene, the big issue there and the hurdle is the humidity here in Thailand. So when you have that humidity during that drying process and whatnot, you can get some disease and that can come in. So that's something they've been working on. We've already checked out one of the main dispensaries on Sukhumvit, the main road in Bangkok, and then we were invited for a private party. So some of the biggest rappers in Thailand, 1 Mil, Birdman, and Fix.
You got a Birdman over there too?
You
got your own Birdman?
They have a Birdman. And he was cool. They were all Isan brothers. And they had a private birthday party there. They had this gun that was loaded with just mad amounts of dabs and weed. And they were just filling up the entire place. It was just a smoke show. You know, so I had to run out of there because I'm pretty sensitive to this. I don't really smoke. And we've been just given just large amounts of weed. And we're like, oh, well, we don't know what to do this. We're just passing it out to friends, you know. So that was pretty cool hanging out with them. I said, that's what do you guys think about weed? They said, smoke weed all day, every day. They said, this is it. So we're going to try to do a whole episode, I think, into like the rap culture here in Thailand and how that here too has been influenced by weed. And now with Thailand leading the way in Asia for being legal and all over the place and now growing some really top-notch dank, you know, stuff.
Dank buds.
We're going to see what's happening. Right, buds. Just as they're about to go back now in politics and say they might want to make it illegal again or make it go back to only medicinal. And now everyone's saying, how are you doing that? You literally just said, okay, it's totally legal. It's everywhere. Weed is everywhere. And now they're going to be like, wait a minute, we're going to go back. Because
you can't put that
with, you know, restrictions.
You can't put that genie back in the bottle.
Back in the bag.
No.
Yeah,
no,
I know, right? It's out already.
You can't just let the station.
So the people have told us we're going to make it work one way or the other. And that's Thailand. Yeah. However they change the laws, they're going to figure out a way to
is it a dollars and cents thing? Like, what are taxes like in Thailand? Do you guys even have taxes?
There is taxes. Like, I know if you don't make a certain amount, like even me working at the school I'm at, you just go and, you know, sign your name in at the tax office and that's it. I don't have to pay anything. Unless you're making large amounts, then they take a certain percent. And it is, I think, up to 15% for foreigners, if I'm not mistaken. Again, that's not my specialty.
Yeah, you're not a big tax. We won't go into it here, but you're not a big tax guy.
I didn't even know my tax number back in the day in America. I think I got it wrong, you know.
It's a great story. So we got we have a buddy. One of our good buddies is a he's in finance, he's tax guys, and he was trying to help Brian with his taxes. This was like 20 years ago, and I remember sitting there. And this is the best thing ever. He's sitting with Brian. He's like, "All right, let's start. Like, what's your Social Security number? Like, let's get started." And Brian's just guessing numbers. He's like, "0-2-2."
Yeah, it's 0-2-0-2-6.
And then I remember our buddy looked at him and he was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, are you absolutely kidding me?" And that was when I knew Brian was not going to be doing anything in the States moving forward, especially as around taxes.
Matt, you know what happened just a few years ago when I was back in the States visiting? I had a Thai friend in Boston and she wanted to buy a car but needed like someone's.
I remember
like,
this. I was
backup
involved.
Name. So I said, "Hey, you can put it under my name, whatever." So I went to the dealership and they took my number. And he had to make a call and he came back and he says, the bank said, "We don't believe this guy exists." And I had to tell that the bank, he's sitting in front of me because there's no data. There's no paper trail of me in America. I supposedly don't exist. I have never bought or sold anything in America because I'm not under tax bracket. It's incredible. I don't know.
You've literally escaped the United States government like no one else has ever been able to do. That might be its own episode. We'll get into that at some point.
Maybe we should do a day in the life of a tax guy.
We got to get you asylum in Thailand first, though, to make sure that they don't come looking for you. But again, it's one of the funniest things that's ever. Like Pat thinks it's the funniest thing of all time that you literally didn't know your social security number, that you couldn't even get past that.
No, but I don't even know it now. I don't. That's
nah, you don't need it. You don't need it. You have a Thai one.
Do you know yours, Matt?
Yeah, by heart. Okay. Yeah, most people do. You have to here. It's like the unique identifier of you as a human being in the States is your social security number.
I will say, like, for a lot of people, they don't really need it until they get to the 17, 18, 19 years.
Yeah. So, when the government starts taking like half of what you make, because, you know, we got to build roads and all that stupid stuff that doesn't actually matter that you need to know.
Yeah.
You're right.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Tell the story.
Well, I was just going to say another thing that we're working on right now is, I think, and this really highlights the unique and beautiful charisma and the character of the Thai people here. We're in a big city like Bangkok, right? So I think over 10 million people or so. And when you talk about emergency response vehicles to any type of accident that may happen in the city, someone faints, heart attack and whatnot, there's just not enough emergency vehicles from hospitals to take care of everything. So the way it works here is that there's two major organizations that have been around since, like, I think the 50s. And they rotate on a 12-hour rotation or shift. And they're placed in different parts of the city. Now, they work as volunteers. That's how it works here. It's a complete volunteer system. That means the ambulances, the horns, the lights, everything they buy, which often has to be imported because it's going to be like really loud so they can zip through the city and make sure, you know, you
get over the noise of the tuk-tuks and the bikes.
Yeah, exactly. This can be a pretty loud, you know, city. So we're doing a whole episode on the volunteer emergency crew and the system that works here. They invest everything, including their time. They have a day job. They check out of their day job, and then they'll show up around 7, 8 p.m., and they stay until 6 to 8 a.m. in the morning. All night, they're on guard, ready to roll. Yeah.
People have unlimited energy.
It blew us away. Even Randy was like, you guys really doing this? They don't get paid anything.
And there's
no alcohol when they're sitting down drinking, you know, hanging out. They're just drinking like Pepsis and whatnot, just waiting NAs. For the next call. We did Athletics. One episode with them, so we're going to follow through because we were so inspired by their story, you know, how they started and how they're giving back to the community. They get a call, you hop in that emergency vehicle, that ambulance, if you will, but it's their own personal ambulance, and they're zipping through the streets of Bangkok like a bat out of hell. And I was sweating bullets. I couldn't believe how fast we were going in the middle of Bangkok at 11 p.m. on a Saturday night, where it's like, you know, craziness in Bangkok.
If you're sketched out, if you're a little bit worried, if you're concerned, then it's real.
Yo, Matt, this was insane. We covered like 3 kilometers in like 2 minutes or something. Boom, red light. We went right through. We're bouncing. It was like crazy.
He went full Kramer. He went full Kramer on the back with the wheel.
The best part is they got everything videotaped. So they got like their dashboard cam and everything like that. So we're going to find a way to like splice that in. So you should be able to get a good feel of like what that scene looks like. And we're going to follow up with a few more episodes with them because they were just amazing people doing this straight up out of the goodness of their heart. You know, they said, we're going to help people and we need to be there fast. Because they said if someone's out unconscious, they literally got, they said, like 4 or 5 minutes before they can resuscitate them with the, the zappers.
Who's waiting in the wings to help them if they're driving so fast that they T-bone somebody on the way to helping somebody else out?
When they all go, they go like multiple different angles. And whoever gets there first, then they call the others off and the others go back. So they got a whole system.
Honestly, that's better than what we have here. And it's not even really all that organized. So that's pretty fascinating.
And you know what? When you go pick up someone, if it's a grandma that fell down, if it's a drunk driver, and they rush them to the hospital or wherever it is they need to do, they do. And they're all trained too. So these are volunteers, but they have to go get trained. They take pride in training in specific fields of healthcare, right? And guess what? Nothing is charged. That person doesn't have to pay anything for all of that work. I mean, they can make an offering they said the plastic or the rubber gloves, the sanitary gloves, they need to touch people that have blood and whatnot. You know, they got to reuse those things all the time. And so they need to buy these constantly every day and keep those in stock on their own.
You could pay them in jade or root, whatever you've got on you really at that point.
And you know what? Speaking of this, if we can grow our channel, if we can show a really unique, like behind the scenes, like deep level part of Thailand that we find so magical, so mystifying, so amazing, so terrifying in some instances with the snakes. And if we can make anything off of that, economically speaking, we know exactly where we can bring this back. You know what I mean? We get to go back and do follow-up videos and say, hey,
people love the concept.
This is for this rice field. This is for the box of gloves, whatever you need. That's our hope right there, is that we can spin this all around. You know,
people love the concept. They love to be taken into somebody else's world that is not going to be their world at any point. I'm not going to be a snake wrangler ever, but I'd like to see what it's about. So it's cool that you're doing that. I mean, where can people find you? Like, what tell people where to go for Day in the Life.
It's Day in the Life Stories. I'm pretty sure that's the tagline right there. But if you have a link, I know
we'll tag it on Instagram
with some pictures. Yeah. But our main thing is YouTube. Anyone interested and anything from Muay Thai to, we haven't done any food yet. So there's a lot of people that focus on food in Thailand, street food. So we're trying to find that different angle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about when it comes to food or anything else for that matter. And you know, Thai food is something everyone knows about. So we're trying to be really clever about a unique spin on exploring, you know, street food or the concept of food or food and people, food and music. I mean, there's so many different ways to go about it. And we're just using our, you know, years of experience living here, connecting to the people to say, okay, this is interesting. Let's talk about it from this side, you know? Yeah. So
it's perfect. It's perfect. It's a perfect concept. Yeah. It's not all that different from what Gibby and I are trying to accomplish, right? Like, we're going at podcasts from a different angle. We're just trying to have these conversations to do a lot of what you're doing, right? Like, educate people. We're like the conduit into your world where you're educating people about things that they don't know. We're trying to bring that to the front. So it's a good little marriage.
I respect that.
Yeah.
That's what I like about you guys too. When I check out your videos, you guys are interviewing people from different walks of life. And that's how we're very similar in that sense. You know, we're not just sticking with one genre, one theme. We're covering across. So people that want to switch it up, like you guys said, you know, your listeners, they want to hear different stories from different people. All right. Yep. This is the stop right here.
It sounds like a deal. It's a diggity deal.
The stories are always amazing, Brian. And I learned something. I get to laugh. And I was thinking about Loot for the last 2 days, knowing this recording was coming up. So rest in peace, Loot.
Rest in peace, Loot.
I don't know if I should have started my day with that news, but be safe out there. Hopefully no more pythons in the immediate future. And definitely go to youtube.com. Day in the Life Stories, and you will see tons of videos, shorts, full-length videos as well. So awesome stuff. I'm going to go on a deep dive later on today. So
thanks, Doug. Thanks for coming. We'll see you soon.
Hey, I appreciate it. Like I said, we're just revving up, so there's going to be a lot in the next 5-6 months. We're going to be having a lot of stuff put on that channel, and I'm really excited to see it myself. So
same.
I really appreciate this day and the time you guys put aside for me.
Appreciate you, dog.
All anytime. Right. You are always welcome back. We love having you.
Awesome. Hey, guys. Have a good one.
Later, bud.